Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
Made it to hump day, but now it's time to get set for a brand new edition of Listen In with KNN. Now today's show will bring you in-depth sports analysis, while also having some fun sports talk, as I welcome in Mr. Robert Jackson. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in, and of course, follow along with the conversation using hashtag ListenInWithKNN.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
Now, as I like to kick off every show, it's time for Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week, where today I have the honor and privilege of honoring Mr. Russell Westbrook of the OKC Thunder. Now, if you've been following the show, you know this is his second time getting honored with the Do Good Award, but I don't mind giving it to him again because he's doing so much good when he's not putting up the big boards, of course, for OKC on the court. He has continuously been a pillar in the community. Now, I'm awarding him this time for recently opening his 20th Russell's Reading Room in Inglewood, California. He has also announced plans for 10 more reading rooms to be opened in the Los Angeles area where he grew up. Westbrook and his Why Not Foundation are also teaming up with Scholastic Books to provide book fairs to the schools getting the reading rooms. Hand clap, yes, Russell, I love that you're doing this. And this is really why he's doing this. His group looked at statistics, and they found that the ratio of books to children in low-income neighborhoods is one book to every 300 children. Get this, compared to one for 13 in middle-income areas. He first announced in April of 2014, so taking you guys back, that Russell's Reading Room was a literacy initiative created to combat this very real issue, and it provided Oklahoma City children access to books in a safe environment where they can read with friends. So a formal ribbon-cutting ceremony officially opened the first Russell's Reading Room at North Highland Elementary School, a part of the Oklahoma City Public School System. So I think this is great. The guest I have coming on later today has also very close ties to education, so it'll kind of tie hand in hand. And then if you've been following my work, you know that I actually do a community action project that I co-founded called Books Breaking Borders, Books to End Educational Bankruptcy, which kind of does the same thing. I look to bring books to students throughout the D&B area and low-income schools. I want these children to be able to have access to books and be able to read. The reason why I was able to get through school and college and even grad school, I started reading at a very young age. I always had access to books and had libraries all around me, but not all children have those access. So my whole platform is getting books to those children in need. So Russell Westbrook, we're thinking alike. I like it. And congrats once again to Russell Westbrook for earning honors this week as Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week. But there's still a whole lot of show left as we have yet to welcome today's special guest onto Listen In with KNN. So guess what? It's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now time to welcome today's special guest to the show, Mr. Robert Jackson. Robert, welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks again for coming on. I know you're super busy, so thanks for making some time out for my little old show.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So before I get into question and answer with you, I want to briefly read your bio. You had a very impressive bio, but I wanted to kind of take some of the biggest tidbits of it so my listeners can get a chance to know you, if you can bear with me while I read through.
Okay.
All right. So Robert Jackson began his teaching career over 20 years ago in the Indianapolis public schools with a no-excuses teaching approach with all of his students. As an educator, he didn't allow his students to feel sorry for themselves or to let their circumstances define their futures. He set high expectations for his students and expected them to do the same. As a coach, he led with the same principles. Several of his former students went from being low-performing to successful pastors, lawyers, school administrators, teachers, sales reps, business owners, pro athletes, entertainers, and more. He has become one of the most sought-after educational consultants in the entire country, delivering keynote addresses and workshops to educators, administrators, parents, and students. Mr. Jackson has written and published 5 books and has written for ASCD EL Leadership Magazine. He is currently writing a new book for ASCD. He attended Western Kentucky University, where he received his BS degree in industrial technology while lettering 4 years in both football and track. After being cut from the NFL Minnesota Vikings, he began his teaching career. As a teacher, Mr. Jackson met many young students, both male and female, who had been broken by life's challenges and were unprepared to deal with life issues, which seemed to weigh heavier than their schoolwork. Instead of focusing on the problem, he decided to focus on the solutions by training students to cope with their inner pain and navigate more effectively through the school system. Wow, Robert, first of all, congratulations on all the great work that you're doing. I do not think teachers and educators get enough respect and attention, and really just props for all the work that you do. But, you know, I just kind of want you to go about, you know, how you went from kind of like a career in sports in college to how did you transition over to teaching and taking some of the skills you learned, you know, on and off the football field?
Okay, great. Good question. First of all, there was a typo there when it said 20 years. I don't recall. Has it been 20 years already? I think I meant 5.
Oh, my gosh. It goes so quickly.
But nobody told me that NFL stood for not for long. You know, I was in training camp, and I was hurt during training camp when I was with the Minnesota Vikings, and I ended up getting cut from the team, and I found myself hobbling into a classroom a little sooner than I expected. So that's how I jumped into education. I kind of made it by default. But teachers are my heroes, you know, because teachers have always had influence on me, whether good or bad, because teachers are really with students more than parents. And especially, you know, my grade school teacher, Ms. Sangster, had a big influence on my life. And, you know, so I jumped into teaching and coaching and with the intentions of not just to educate kids, but I wanted to activate and motivate them as well. I wanted to get them ready beyond high school, beyond college, getting ready for life. We don't have enough of our kids that are prepared for the future. So I consider myself more than a teacher. I wore so many different hats. Sometimes I was big brother. Sometimes I was a counselor. Sometimes I was father figure. So it just depends on the day. I believe that educators should be paid like doctors and lawyers. It's a tough job. But I really enjoyed it. I'm enjoying what I'm doing now. Doing professional development with educators, administrators, parents, and students around the country. So,
I mean, I think that's incredible, the work that you do. As you said, you know, you've had to put on the hat of big brother. I know when through my mentoring work, you know, I've kind of had to be a sister, you know, to some of these young ladies, you know, that need inspiration. Or sometimes, you know, some of them look at me as a mom. But one thing I think, you know, not a lot of us think about is the educators and them kind of getting more consulting. Because, of course, they go to school to learn how to teach different subject matters. But how do you teach, like, educators, you know, to deal with these, some of the problems, we'll say, that students have, you know, at home, you know, or in life?
Well, the first thing you have to do, you have to be open to it. Some of the problems that, you know, I discuss with educators, I mean, it's tough. You know, you're talking about kids who are coming from really, really tough backgrounds, and some educators who don't have any experience dealing with these kind of kids who are coming from these backgrounds. But you have to have an open mind. I ask educators all the time, do you feel like these kids, you know, Principal Cafele always says this, do you feel like these kids are at an advantage because you're their teacher? And if you don't feel that way, then we got a problem. And I asked the teachers in Tuscaloosa, Alabama last week that question. and it was about probably 300-400 teachers in the audience. Only about 20 stood. Then I asked the question, how many of you care about your kids? And all kind of hands went up. How many of you have empathy for your kids? And the hands went up. And I said, then these kids are at an advantage because you have empathy and you care for these kids. So if you care about these kids, that's half the battle. You can teach any subject. You can teach any subject that you want to teach. But if the kids are not focused, if the kids are not in tune to what you're saying, you cannot teach who you can't reach.
Right.
And then that's a big gap between educators, parents, and students. So I just try to help these educators understand that their character, their value, and their visions are going to shape their kids for their future, and also get them to take a look at themselves. You know, before you start pointing the finger, look at yourself, look at your biases, look at your stereotypes, look at your perception, because many of your perceptions have become reality, because many of them watch the news every day, and they run around scared of kids, and they're scared especially kids of color. So I think it's important that perception does not become reality, because everybody has a story. Everybody has things in the past that they're not proud of. Most of us come from dysfunctions at some point in our family. You know, we need to deal with the root of anger. So those are some of the things we deal with for the most part. But more importantly, we got to address racism, discrimination, and cultural barriers. Those are three things that I will address during my presentations.
And it's so good that you do, because I think so many of the time, you know, those topics are kind of like hush-hush. You know, so many times, so many people are scared to talk about it. And I think that's one of the problems we have. You know, we have to talk about it, because otherwise, how can we get to a solution to solve those problems? And, you know, staying on that topic, I mean, I want to go back to the student athletes that you've probably worked with. And, of course, I mean, I cover student athletes. You've been a student athlete. How are you, like, relaying a message for, like, life after football, or really life after any sport? Because, of course, I mean, as you said, the NFL, you know, it is kind of not for long, right? You can't play in there forever. And then we also know how hard it is to get there, really any pro league. So how do you kind of prepare them for life after being a college student athlete, or even a high school student athlete, you know, for like the real world?
Well, the first thing is I tell them the truth. I said, what does 6% mean to you? And they look at me strange when I'm talking to student athletes. And I said, well, let me explain to you. 6% of all high school athletes make it on to a Division I team. Then I said, what does less than 1% mean? Less than 1% of those college athletes that are playing Division I, II, or III, or wherever they're playing, less than 1% are going to make it into an NFL training camp.
Right.
So that means that 99.9% of you are going to go pro in something outside of sports. So I always talk to kids, and I call them kids, student athletes. I talk to them about preparing for the future. How do you do that? Well, you major in something outside of sports. You can't just major in football. You can't just major in basketball. You can't major in track.
Unfortunately,
You can't major in this Now, one of the things, I played for a guy named Jack Harbaugh. His son, are coaches in NFL and in college. You know, John is in Baltimore, of course, and then Jim is in Michigan. But one of the first conversations –
I said exactly. We all know the Harbaugh brothers.
Yeah, I played for their dad. So one of the first conversations that we ever had when I was a freshman in college at Western Kentucky University, I said, you're going to use me to run up and down this football field, and I'm going to use you to get an education. He said, run
that
by me again. I said, you're going to use me to run up and down this football field, and I'm going to use you to get an education. He said, I have never had a student athlete say those words to me, and I need athletes to start looking at this thing differently. They're going to use you to get national championships, to win games, to bring money to the university. You're going to use them to get an education, but you need to do something with that education. Don't just go to school and take it for granted. Take it seriously. And you go to class, and you go hard in class, just like you go hard on the football field or the basketball court or the track or the baseball diamond or the volleyball court or whatever you do. You need to go hard in the classroom just like you do on the field.
Right. Given that same energy everywhere, obviously, in the classroom, as you said, and on the field or on the court or wherever.
I come with the same energy and vigor when I go speak, when I'm giving presentations. I put in the same preparation, because you know why? Proper preparation prevents poor performance. I always use that. Proper preparation prevents poor performance. I was speaking to a group of young men on Sunday, and they whining and crying. Well, I got cut from the team, and I didn't do this, and I didn't do that. I said, hold up. Those sound like a bunch of excuses. You are a product of your choices. I said, because somebody's out there pushing. Somebody's running. They don't care how cold it is. They're running. They're training. They're getting themselves together. You decided that you want to watch video games and you don't want to do it. Or you want to watch TV and play video games. So you're going to suffer the consequences of that. You know, you're going to reap what you sowed. If you go in here and work hard, you're going to be rewarded for that.
Right. Right.
That's what I think.
So well said. So well said. You know, it needs to be heard, as you said, because, I mean, it's competition everywhere. But to be the best, obviously, like you said, you have to train, you know, to be the best. And that's your body, your mind, everything. You know, it's a whole package deal. And I love that you go around the country, you know, preaching that message, because it's obviously always someone that needs to hear it. So I congratulate you. I want you to keep up the great work. And I mean, now I want to get into the show, Robert. I mean, you're so much fun to already speak with. Now, usually I kick it off. I like that. See, same right here. So bringing that same energy to the listeners. I usually like to start my show with the Doing It Big and the D&D segment, but I want to go into Kelsey's Across the Nation segment, because if you stayed up last night, you might have saw this big game on TV, the college football
national championship. Oh, I watched that whole game. I had to stay up for it. I stayed up for the whole game. I did. That was a that was a great, great college football game. As a matter of fact, one of the best games I ever seen was USC against Texas. When they had Vince Young and they had Reggie Bush. But this was a good game. It was a good game because it went into overtime, and you don't see too many games that go into overtime. And then when the kicker from Alabama missed a kick,
you thought he had it.
I was like, if I was Georgia, I'd be licking my chops. Like, let's go get him. I'm telling you what, that young man came in off the bench and just shut it down, didn't he?
It's his team now, right? I mean, literally everyone is going to be looking at a dictionary trying to pronounce his last name, but Tua took over the game. I mean, and you had Jalen Hurts, who has been a solid quarterback, of course, for Alabama. But, I mean, I think going into the half, I think we all knew something had to change as Alabama went in down 13 to nothing to Georgia. I mean, you knew something had to change, and we all know Nick Saban. He's not going to stay down for too long. So, sure enough, we see Tua come out and ball out.
Nick Saban came out there looking like a hero. You know, he made a choice, and that was a gamble to wait to the national championship game to throw in a backup.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know
a freshman backup?
That was? So, and the backup came in with confidence. I was just like, this young man is playing like he's been here before.
Right.
You know,
he came out throwing the ball. I mean, let you know his confidence and the confidence his team, you know, had behind him. And then that play, you know, where he kept scrambling to avoid the sack and get, you know, to the first down line.
Oh,
and that's when I was like,
I just knew Georgia had him. He got sacked back on the 40-yard line. It would have been like a 50-something-yard field goal. And you know the field goal kicker wasn't doing that well for Alabama last night.
Oh, my gosh. Nope.
So
nope.
I thought it was a gutsy call. And the way he looked off the free safety, a lot of people who don't understand how to read defenses and look at the game in its totality, if you watch him, he looked at the free safety and looked him off to the right.
Yes.
Then he threw the ball to the left. I thought it was a masterful play. But there were some questionable calls in that game, too. I was really disappointed in the way the game was refereed. I feel like a couple of those players on Alabama got away with some things. One of them got away with a face mask, a call. He got away with that. Another Alabama player pushed the guy's face to the ground.
Yeah,
that should have been
a
personal foul.
That was crazy.
Yeah, that should have been a personal foul, especially with it being a quarterback. I thought maybe there was about four or five questionable calls that were going against Georgia that I really had a problem with. But Alabama, you know, another thing, Georgia didn't execute at the end. I didn't understand why they wasn't running Mike. Is it Michael or Michelle?
Yes, Michelle. Yep.
Michelle. I didn't understand why they weren't running. That was your best asset last night.
He started
with Michelle.
The game so strong, right? And then they forgot about him.
Then they forgot about him. They kept trying to run.
It was crazy.
No disrespect to Chubb. Chubb didn't have. He didn't have it last night.
Right.
Michelle did. And you take the X factor out. So that was difficult to see, but.
I mean, great game. 26, you know, 23. I love the battle of the Ridley brothers, too, right? I mean, how cool is it? Your brother on the other side of the field. And then the game went down to the end. So I know, like, for their family, I mean, I don't know what to do as a family when that's going on.
I would like to be at that dinner table, those Ridley brothers. One of them's going to win the national title, and I'm sure he's going to throw it in the other one's face.
You know it.
But it was a great game. And Georgia, even though they were, you know, the referees cheated a little bit, let's be honest, Georgia still had their chance.
Right. They didn't execute.
Right.
And I think
Alabama,
they had injuries and they were going down. And then did you see the, you know, the stuff on the sidelines with Brown, you know, trying to punch the coach?
They had Alabama rattled. They were fighting on the sideline. They had lost control at that point. And what you do in that situation, you don't. And I felt like the coaching. I felt like Saban outcoached Georgia's coach down the stretch.
Kirby Smart, yeah.
I feel like Georgia's coach was just playing just well enough to win. And let me tell you something. In any game that you play in, it's not over until the whistle blows.
Right.
So that means everybody has an opportunity. And I feel like Georgia coasted in the second half. And you can't coast in those kind of games.
Right.
You gotta continue to put the pressure on them. You got to continue to go after them. And, you know, they just went away with what was working for them in the first half. You had them down 13-0.
I mean, at that point, honestly, Alabama fans are probably going crazy. I mean, like, Georgia had all the momentum. I mean, you saw the interception. Like, you know, you just really thought Georgia had it. And then, of course, they've had the drought. They had Herschel Walker cheering them on. Like,
absolutely.
I feel like everything
Herschel
was on
like
Georgia's side. He probably wanted to
Herschel
be in that game.
Herschel looks good, by the way. Looks like he's still can shoot up. But the interception, I thought the interception was questionable. I thought that was an interception. There was just a couple bad calls because now Georgia's player pulled the face mask of an Alabama player, they called it.
Right.
And I thought Kirk Herbstreit, he sounded like he was going for Alabama the whole time. You know, he wasn't really neutral in the game, so I thought that was interesting.
But I feel like when you have Alabama, honestly, it's so hard because everybody knows Alabama, right? I mean, you know they're a good team, right? This is Nick Saban's six. You pretty much know they have NFL players on the roster. You know, and then it's the SEC, you know, in the SEC, obviously, Alabama is a favorite. I mean, you know, you expect them now in the championship game.
Hey,
but
a couple questionable calls, but I still feel like Alabama beat them, outplayed them at the end in the second half because – That big number 99 for Alabama, oh, he was a monster. He came to play.
There wasn't much you could do with him.
Wasn't a whole lot you can do with him. You know, put five bodies on him. He was hungry to win. He played all the way through all four quarters, and that's what you have to do to win. And Georgia came up short. The Alabama kicker gave him a chance. He gave him a chance.
Gosh.
He missed the field goal.
Right. Two field goals in the game. Missed.
And then Georgia's quarterback took the sack. When Georgia's quarterback took that sack and then they made that 48-yard field goal, I thought they had it won. But it wasn't over.
And then sure enough, I mean, I love it. Tua gets stacked for 16 yards back deep, and then the next play he throws a touchdown. I mean, if you blink and you turn the channel, you missed it.
Young people and old, take note. When you get knocked down, but you don't get knocked out.
Yeah.
That young man got knocked back, and he took a sack. He could have went on in the sack and just curled up and said, hey, that's it. He came back out swinging, and that's what you have to do in life. That is a life lesson. He came back, and he looked that free safety off, and he threw a strike. I mean, it was a perfect spiral pass. He came to win.
I mean, it was fun to watch. He did. And I feel like, you know, he got his chance, and he proved himself on a national stage, and now that's his team. I mean, and, you know, saying with that, tell me, what do you think is going to happen with Jalen Hurts? Because that's the question now. I mean, you know, he had to sit, you know, and watch this quarterback. He did go back in for one play after Tua went in. But tell me, I mean, do you think we'll see Jalen Hurts staying at Alabama? Or do you think, is it best for him to move on to another school possibly?
No, I think everybody needs to pump their brakes. I think everybody needs to pump their brakes. That young man needs to stay at Alabama because, first of all, he don't have the greatest arm, so nobody's going to be like, chopping up the bit for him anyway. So
he's a runner.
He needs to stay in Alabama, and he needs to work on the things that he needs to work on, and one of them is his arm, and he needs to challenge that young man. He needs to go in there and challenge him for his job. If you show me an athlete, show me some resiliency. Bounce back from this. I think he had the right attitude last night when he was celebrating with the team, as he should have. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about, I'm going to celebrate this one night, and then I'm going to the lab. I need to get my arm together. I need to work on passing because that's the weakness in my game. That's what I tell educators. I say nobody in this room is perfect. You have to work on your weaknesses. And this young man has weaknesses in throwing. Now people forgot. Jalen Hurst took them 25-2 over the last couple of years.
Yeah, he's good.
He's only lost two games. So the young man's a winner. Now he's a winner. He just needs to work on some things. So I'm not going to throw the young man under the bus. I think that he should go back to the drawing board. He needs to work on passing, and he needs to go challenge that young man for that job. That's what I think he should do. I don't think he should transfer. I've been hearing all the stories. Now, this young man's played one game, and everybody's want to crown him. Now, he came in and did a great job, and he boosted him up, got the trophy and all that. But I would come back and fight for my job. You know, it's not over until it's over. And even if he won the job, I would still stay there. Because, you know, quarterbacks go down. And you next man up. So I don't think he's leave, in my opinion.
Okay.
I'm hearing the commentators and everybody saying, well, you know, he needs to transfer and he needs to this. I'm like, get out of here. I've lost two games in the last 2 years. I'm a competitor. You're gonna have to knock me out. I'm not down, but I ain't knocked out. And he should be a little embarrassed. He's probably a little bit embarrassed because the freshman came in, the true freshman came in and basically sparked the
just
team.
Just balled out.
Because he,
right.
And threw three touchdown passes in the second half. If you want to be a quarterback in the National Football League or the Collegiate League, you have to be able to throw the ball. You can't just run
simple.
The ball.
Right. Right. And that's what he asked
Michael
to learn.
Vick
I'm like you. That's a
I'm
perfect
sorry,
example. And that's what, no, I think you're, Michael Vick was who I was going to bring up. Because, you know, Jalen reminds me of him on his legs, but he doesn't have an arm like
Michael Vick can
saying,
throw
right?
the ball.
He could throw it, right. And that's what Jalen needs to learn how to do if he wants to be like Michael Vick. And I think that's, I mean, I think it's too early to pump. I mean, you know, nobody knew Tua would go in and, you know, do what he did. But I think Jalen Hurts still has a promising career at Alabama. We saw something similar happen at Ohio State, of course, when they had their
quarterback
controversy.
Absolutely.
And it worked out for them, right? So I think
it
can,
it
you know,
out.
Work. I think with Nick Saban, I mean, you want to be under a top coach like him. As you said, he can continue to grow. All eyes are still on him, of course, because we're going to continue to watch Alabama. I mean, you remember the national championship game last year, right? I mean, Jalen Hurts, you know, again, quality quarterback that, you know, almost took his team the full way. And, you know,
yeah,
I'm rooting for him as well.
Last year. Absolutely.
Right.
I don't think he should leave. If I can talk to that young man, I would say, Jalen, listen, you got knocked down, but you didn't get knocked out. There are some things that you need to work on as a quarterback. And even though you're 25-2, don't get comfortable. This is a wake-up call because somebody else is always lurking trying to take your spot. And if I were you, I would get to the drawing board this spring. I would get to the drawing board this summer. I would work on those things I need to work on. And come spring football, we're going to challenge for this. I'm not just going to give it to you. I'm not going to lay down and give it to you. No, we're going to fight for this one. And if he's a competitor, that's what he's going to do.
Right. I mean, that's what obviously I think that's what he is. And that's why I think we have not seen the end of Jalen Hurts. And, you know, now I want to talk about the beginning of the game, Robert, that also caused a lot of people on social media to go ablaze when, of course, we saw President Donald Trump actually walk onto the field and stand with members of the military for the national anthem during this game on Monday night. Of course, I don't think a lot of people knew he was coming. And, you know, he stood with his hand over his heart and he, you know, sang along to parts of the anthem. But tell me kind of, you know, what were your thoughts when you saw the president on the field singing, you know, the national anthem?
Well, he wasn't really singing the national anthem because he didn't know the words. So
that's
that
what some people were saying on social media.
that was a little bit embarrassing to see the same president who called football players SOBs for not standing for the flag. You don't even know the words to the national anthem. And he should have been embarrassed by that.
And, you know, really quick, Robert, I want to point out something, too. It said they reported that hours earlier he was actually in Nashville making a speech where he again criticized athletes for kneeling during the national anthem to police brutality. So this was just hours before he got to the game.
Well, it's just so many different directions I can go in with this with number 45. I call him 45 because I can't even call him president because it's so embarrassing some of the things he does and all the tweets he sends out. But listen. I think you're doing it. You're the most disgraceful person to the military, not those football players. The football players know the national anthem. You don't even know the words. So you're criticizing athletes for kneeling for their rights, and it's obvious you don't know the Constitution either or the amendment. So you're criticizing players for exercising their First Amendment, but you don't know the words to the national anthem. So I found it embarrassing. I believe other countries consider our leader a joke. There's people in this country who consider him a joke because when you call yourself the president, you have to be the president of all the people. Because when those skinheads were up in, I think it was Virginia.
Charlottesville? Yeah, Charlottesville.
Charlottesville. when they were doing that march up in Charlottesville, you said those were good people. They're practicing hate. You have somebody who's practicing their first right amendment to kneel for police brutality, because that's called a microaggression. If it's not happening in your world, it doesn't mean anything to you. That's invisibilization. We have to stop doing that kind of stuff here in this country, and our leader is leading the way. You know, so I felt I felt embarrassed that he didn't know the words. I thought it was embarrassing.
And, you know, also another point I want to point out is that, you know, some people actually have talked about how the players didn't come onto the field, but many, I guess, if you haven't watched college football, you know, it is normal, of course, in college football, of course, to have them not on the field during the national anthem. So, you know, I want to make sure people know that point. Because some people thought it was because the president was there. That the
I don't think it was because the president's there. Everybody has rituals. And I don't recall, sometimes we weren't out on the field when the national anthem was played. Sometimes we were. So it just depends.
Right.
And I think that it's overshadowed. This whole national anthem protest has been overshadowed by some of his comments. And he hasn't been a good leader, because these young men are not kneeling to disrespect the military or disrespect the flag, because many of their family members and friends are in the military, right?
Mm-hmm.
These young men are kneeling out of respect for the flag, because they were told by one of the Green Berets that, hey, if you want to, and this guy was white, he wasn't even black.
Mm-hmm.
They said, if you want to show respect to the military and show respect to the flag, but make a stand, just kneel.
Right.
That's lost in the shuffle as well. But I just feel like if you're going to criticize people, make sure that you're handling yourself properly at the right times. And I think it's embarrassing for someone to be leading this country, but don't know the words to the national anthem. I think that's embarrassing to me.
All right. You know, that's why social media, I mean, it was crazy comments going, you know, both ways. But, you know, on this show, we have to talk about it. Then also now I want to move to halftime. I mean, what did you think of rapper Kendrick Lamar performing some of his hits like DNA and Element? What do you think about his overall halftime performance?
Oh, I thought Kendrick Lamar, I thought it was too short. I thought he should have did about three more songs. No,
oh,
Kendrick
I
Lamar
been all for
was,
it.
Yeah, he's very talented. And I commend the committee on bringing someone in that was going to really ignite the people. And if you look at the crowd and the audience, they were hyped. And he had all the hands.
Yeah.
You know what I saw in that audience? I saw Asians, I saw Mexicans, I saw Latinos,
yes.
I saw
diversity
blacks,
at its
whites.
Best.
I saw
yes.
people united. And that's what we need to be doing in this country, is uniting people. And I felt like Kendrick Lamar coming out, I didn't see anybody upset. I saw people smiling. I saw people had their phones out recording it. And I saw people having a great time. So I really enjoyed watching them.
I mean, it was great. I mean, Kendrick put on a show, and I love that he did it by himself. I mean, he didn't need background dancers or anything. All we were all just focused on him because that's how good of a performer he is. I love
it. He came out with his coat on. He came out with his Eskimo coat on and went to work.
I
really enjoyed it. I'm sure
that coat sold out today after everyone talked.
I'm sure it did. But he's a very, very, very talented young man, and the way he speaks to – and I feel like he's using his voice to speak to the young people in a way that a lot of artists aren't doing in a positive way. And he's using that voice. Be humble. Look at the lyrics. Be humble. Sit down.
Right.
Be humble. You know, he's basically saying, look, no matter who you are, be humble. You know.
Right.
That was a moving, not changing the subject, but another moving speech this week from Oprah. I thought that was awesome, too.
Right, another one. You know, people are now calling her for Oprah for president for 2020 after that scene. So, you know, just because when you're on a platform like that, you know, people really are
listening. You got a reality
they
star, you know.
Attention.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got a reality star that's a reality show host as the president. Why not have a talk show host? I mean, why not?
Hey, you never know. I mean, The Rock even said he might run in 2024, so. You never know, you know, I mean, and also,
yeah,
you know, been on Kendrick Lamar, what did you think about that Black Panther preview after? Are you excited for the movie?
Oh, I'm so geeked about this movie. I can't wait for it to come out. I think it's going to be a great movie. And I just really appreciate the director and the producers putting together a movie like this, because it's a long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about seeing a Black superhero. I love it.
Yes.
You know, and the Black Panther. And even though the young man is playing against him, and I know he's been going through a lot of controversy, but I'm just excited about the movie coming out. And I'm telling you what, I'm gonna see this one at the theater. I can't wait.
Wait in line. I might even wait in line at midnight. Like, that's how excited
I am. I might get my tickets earlier that day. We're going to see that. That's going to be awesome.
Everybody wants to see it. And I love that Kendrick is even helping with the soundtrack. Like, it's going to overall.
Oh, he's doing the whole soundtrack, I think.
Well, then, hey, even more reason.
So, you know, I'm going to get busy. So, I'm got to pick up that soundtrack, too. So.
Oh, yeah. Both of them. You need both of them. Now, Robert,
absolutely.
I want to stay in the biggest headlines in sports, and I want to stay in football, actually, but I want to move to the pros and want to talk about Johnny Manziel. Now, he's back in the headlines because it was actually reported that a Canadian Football League team actually wants him. So the Hamilton Tiger Cats confirmed Sunday that they have officially begun negotiations with quarterback Johnny Manziel, and a team issued statement. They said, as per the negotiation list process, Johnny Manziel and his agent recently notified the Tiger Cats that they have activated the 10-day window during which the Tiger Cats must offer him a contract or lose his negotiation with rights. That window closed on Sunday, and we can confirm that we made an offer to Manziel and that his rights will remain on our negotiation list while discussions with his agent continue. We have no further comments. So, I mean, just tell me your overall thoughts. Would you like to see Manziel back in football over up north in Canada?
Well, you know, I don't really watch a lot of the Canadian games because, you know, I'm an NFL type of guy. But
right.
I think everybody deserves a second chance. I think the young man came in the league cocky, arrogant, and he got humbled real quick.
Right.
He came in making some bad decisions, drinking and making all kind of other bad decisions and throwing up the money sign. One thing about the NFL I know, even though I was only in a short period of time, is that these guys are hungry.
Right.
These guys are big, and these guys are humble, and they will humble you.
Right.
They will humble you real quick. And I believe Johnny Manziel has been humbled. He won the Heisman Trophy. I think he was the Manning Award winner. He won the Davey O'Brien Award for the best player in the country that year. All that means nothing when you go to the pros. Nobody cares.
Right.
Nobody cares if you was the best male athlete for the ESPYs or you was Sporting News College Football Player of the Year. Nobody cares. In fact, it puts a target on your chest. And it causes guys to come after you and humble you. And I think that he went in talking and running his mouth and wasn't really focused on football. He was focused on partying and what the NFL stood for, and that's why he's not in the league right now. But I do think the young man deserves a second chance. Hopefully he'll take advantage of it and take it seriously. And I hope he but more importantly, I'm more concerned with him off the field. I want him to get himself together off the field with the drinking, with the drugs, with the hanging out. You know, when you call yourself an athlete and you call yourself a leader, especially a quarterback, and you're supposed to be the leader of the team, you're going to be held to a different standard.
Right.
You don't believe me? Ask Jameis Winston.
Perfect example. Ask
Peyton Manning, some of the quarterbacks from the past who retired. Ask Tom Brady. Ask some of these other quarterbacks who are in the league. You have to Cam Newton, and he's learned the hard way. You have to lead by example. And if you're going to call yourself a leader, then lead. Because, you know, once you start doing stuff out of the realm of playing football and leading a team, then you become a distraction. And that's why he's not in the NFL right now.
And I think you make such great points. And people that might have questions like, well, you know, how could he go into the Canadian Football League? It actually was approved in late December by the Canadian Football League commissioner that, you know, he could enter the league after an ongoing assessment by an independent expert on the issue of violence against women, a review by legal counsel, and an in-person interview. So they did have the steps to go through. But, of course, he did get in his trouble off the field. I'm like, I think he does deserve a second chance. And then, of course, I mean, the CFL has, you know, proven a way for people to get back in the NFL. I mean, most recently you had former Browns and Indianapolis Colts running back Trent Richardson, who actually was the third overall pick. He played in four games in the Canadian Football League, you know, this year. And I think, it has proven time and time again when guys want to get back. Now, who's to say if Manziel will get back into the league? Of course, he was with the Cleveland Browns. And if you remember, before he left, he did throw for 1,675 yards. He had 7 touchdowns and 7 interceptions while he was 2-6 as a starter in Cleveland. And I'm like you. I think if he grows up, he can be there. But then I don't know if you saw Robert, but on Saturday, he actually trolled the Cleveland Browns. Of course, on Saturday, Cleveland Browns fans actually mockingly celebrated their team going 0-16 in the regular season. They actually had a parade in Cleveland, which was crazy. But Manziel, under the picture, he put 0-16 season. So, of course, people were like, well, he's trolling them basically because he's not on the team anymore. So I don't know if that proves that he's grown up yet, you know, if he's still doing that type of stuff. Even though it's
proves that he hasn't. If you want to be honest about it, proves that he hasn't grown up, because you don't take jabs at the team who even took a chance on you in the first place. And you're not standing in a position to take a jab at anybody. You know, you're not in the league right now. You want to be in the NFL really bad, but you're not. But you want to take a jab at somebody else. That shows your character. That shows your value, and it shows your vision. And, you know, if I was an NFL owner or a coach, I wouldn't want that kind of person on my team, because when you're the quarterback, you're the face of the franchise. Quarterbacks usually make more money than everybody on the team, and they're held to a different standard. And Johnny Manziel has not grown up yet. He's still a little baby. He's a spoiled brat. He's been spoiled by his parents. He still thinks he's, you know, he hides behind their wealth. And at some point, he needs to step up and become a man. I mean, you're 25 years old. You know, it's time for you to step up and become a man. And, you know, I think that that gesture that he made, that whole parade incident was just disturbing to me.
It was crazy in general,
You know, it was, and then the coach, I think Cleveland's coach said he would jump in the lake if they go, if they don't win the game. So has he done that yet?
I haven't heard about him doing it.
You don't make
It's just hard times in Cleveland.
Yeah, when you lose all your games like that, the last thing you want is for someone to have a parade
celebrating
you all your games. You know, that is, that's embarrassing. I mean, they're poking fun at him. And if I was one of those players on that team, I would be embarrassed. And I'm praying for I think it was Josh Gordon. I'm really praying that he gets his life together, because he's a very, very talented young man.
Oh my gosh,
and
really,
and I know he's had some dependency issues, but let me tell you something. You put that young man on your team is going to be different, because he's one of the best in the league. So I'm really rooting for him and praying that he gets it together. But back to Johnny Manziel, you know, everybody deserves a second chance, but he needs to get that Kendrick Lamar CD and be humble and sit down.
Truly
and
listen
I think
to
once
it,
he does that, I think once he does that, he's going to be in good shape.
You know, we do wish the best to Johnny. And, you know, I want to stay in the NFL, Robert, because it's been so much news back and forth, because, of course, after the regular season, you get ready for the firings and the hirings, right, of all the NFL teams. And, you know, the one that headlined, Robert, was John Gruden going to the Raiders. Of course, he did spend four seasons as the Raiders head coach from 1998 to 2001. And, of course, now we see him on TV talking all his great talk of all the football routes and stuff like that. But reportedly, he'll get the 10-year contract worth $100 million in the NFL. Wow. What did you think when you heard this news?
I was in total shock and disbelief. First of all, you don't hear about contracts for 10 years for coaches.
No, because you know they're going to get fired.
Last 2 years. Yeah, some coaches don't last 2 years with a program. Secondly, when he said he was traded to Tampa Bay, you don't hear about coaches getting traded. You hear about coaches getting hired and fired, not traded.
Right, one of two.
Thirdly, one of the richest contracts in NFL history, if not the richest. He's going to be making more than his any of the highest paid players. But my last point is he hasn't coached in a while. Really didn't understand the logic there, but you know, Raider Nation is excited, and I hated to see Jack Del Rio get fired. I felt like he brought that team to prominence. And they are moving to Vegas. So I guess they're looking for a different leader and a different look. But I was really shocked that somebody get, because NFL coaching contracts are guaranteed. So it's not like, you know, if they fire him in 2 years, he still gets $100 million. I need to make sure everybody understands that. So to make that kind of commitment to a coach, 10 years, $100 million, I mean – that's very puzzling for me, because the game changes so much. He hasn't coached in many years, and it's not like he was winning a bunch of football games when he coached. I mean, he took Tony Dungy's team in Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's team. And let me be clear, Tony Dungy put that team together.
Exactly.
And he came in, and Tony Dungy got fired, and he won the Super Bowl with Tony's team, but then he got fired from there a couple years later. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, it's not like he's a Nick Saban, like he's won several titles and several Super Bowl trophies and championships. You know, it's not like he's John Wooden. But you know, it's the Raiders, and they want to give somebody $100 million. Who am I to stop them? You know, give it to me.
That
I'll take
just broke it. And that's what he did, right? I mean, it was easy to see what his decision would be. No wonder he took that job. I mean, it's huge.
When they said that he was thinking about what he wanted to do, and I heard the rumors about $100 million, so what is there to think about? The man loves to coach.
Right.
And somebody's going to take a chance on me and give me $100 million for coaching, I'm going to give it my all. But just keep in mind, you know, most coaches, and you heard about all the coaches getting fired this year.
And we're going to go through some of them.
Yeah, most coaches don't make it through. Belichick is like, Coach Belichick is like the standard, right? You know, he's been Coach Tomlin from the Steelers. He's the standard.
Yep.
He's been with his team over 10 years. Belichick, John Harbaugh, some of these coaches been with these teams for a long time. But for the most part, it's a coaching carousel.
Right.
So they're taking a big hefty chance on this guy. So it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers are just crazy. But then if we move over to the Bears, Matt Nagy, Chicago, tapped the former Chiefs offensive coordinator to be its new head coach. He's 39 and spent the last two seasons as Kansas City's offensive coordinator. So that was some of the other big news. But now I want to run through some of the firings and retirements in the NFL. Of course, the Arizona Cardinals, big news was Bruce Arians making it official Monday morning that he's retiring. Baltimore Ravens, their defensive coordinator, Dean Pease, said he will retire following a 45-year coaching career. Wow, just extraordinary coaching career.
Wow.
Then the Panthers fired offensive coordinator Mike Shula and quarterbacks coach Ken Dorsey. And that was pretty quick, of course, after the Carolina Panthers, of course, lost to the New Orleans Saints. So that pretty much tells you, as you said, a coaching carousel. And then John Fox was fired in Chicago after three seasons. If you've been following the Bears, you know the seasons didn't go too well. That he was there. America's team, the Cowboys, wide receivers coach Derek Dooley left to become the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach for Missouri, actually, and then tight ends coach Steve Looney planned to retire. And then quarterbacks coach Wade Wilson's contract will not be renewed. So that's something to keep your eyes on, Cowboy fans. And then Broncos are actually keeping Vance Joseph, but they did fire six coaches. Jeff Davidson. You know, they fired everybody else.
That was a horrible day to be
in
coach.
Oh my gosh! Unless you're Vance Joseph, but tell me, what do you think that says about Vance Joseph in Denver? I mean, does that just show they continually, you know, are really believing in him that he can get the Broncos back to possibly a Super Bowl?
One thing I tell people all the time: nobody's in the locker room, nobody's in the film room, nobody is there but the owners and the coaches and. Nobody really knows the work they put in. So it's obvious that Coach Vance Joseph is considered a hot commodity with the Denver Broncos and John Elway. But it's obvious that the other six coaches weren't. I mean, they even fired the assistant head coach.
So
I think they have a lot of confidence in him. But I will tell you this. Once they fire six coaches – and you bring in a new staff and you still don't get the job done, you're going to be on the chopping block. That was a big surprise to me that they kept him and fired six other coaches.
That was crazy. Yeah.
It was also another surprise to me was Detroit Lions firing
Jim Caldwell.
I thought Detroit were playing decent. I know they had a couple bad games, but Jim Caldwell had those guys playing pretty good. And that's why I'm saying with this contract with John Gruden, you get this man a 10-year contract, you know, you may want him out of there in 2 years or 3 years. And if it doesn't work, you're still stuck with paying $100 million to him and then paying someone else. And some of these coaches, I don't understand. I mean, Jim Caldwell was fired from the Colts as well, but he's going to get a job. And I know that Chuck Pagano, he was fired from the Colts, and these guys are going to get jobs. And I feel bad for Chuck Pagano. You know, you lose your quarterback for the year. You lose Andrew Luck. Then you bring in Brissette from the Patriots. I mean, seriously?
Right, Jacoby. Mm-hmm.
Don't you have two other quarterbacks that know the system? So I feel like Chuck Pagano was fighting an uphill battle. I don't feel the coach should have fired him. I feel like they should have gave him a chance next year with Andrew Luck or whoever the quarterback's going to be. But he's going to land on his feet. I'm hearing rumors that he's going to end up in Baltimore with
John Harbaugh. Oh, I definitely see that coming.
He came from the Ravens. So
right. So why not go back? And they love him in Baltimore. So I can see
They love him. He coached Ray Lewis and he coached some of those guys. So I think he's going to be back. One that I was really happy about was the coach from the Giants, Ben McAdoo.
Oh, yes. Everybody in New York was rejoicing.
I feel like the way that, first of all, when you lose Odell Beckham, you lose half your offense. Okay,
right.
Odell Beckham is half your offense, and you're going to bench Eli Manning, two-time Super Bowl champion. It was just the way he did it. This guy's on a winning streak. He's won over 200 consecutive games. He's going for the record, and you sit him out for one game because he should have got fired. I thought that was a bad move. I don't think that Eli Manning is the problem. I believe there's a lot of players dropping passes. If you go back and watch the film from the New York Giants,
Eli Manning
puts the ball on those guys, and they're dropping the ball.
Right, they have butterfingers.
They got butterfingers, like they're catching with the back of their hand. So I felt like the firing with Ben McAdoo was justified. I didn't like the firing of Jack Del Rio. I didn't like that.
Right.
I think the players were playing hard for him. You know, the quarterback, Carr, got hurt last year. He had a subpar year this year. But Jack Del Rio brought your team from the ashes. And I felt bad about him being fired. Bruce Arians.
I didn't like
you brought
that
up
either.
Bruce Arians. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that was bad. But you brought up Bruce Arians. Great guy. He is a great coach.
He's well-respected.
He's a great guy. Well-respected, hated to see him retire. But some of the other ones, it was a few questionable ones, especially Chuck Pagano and Jack Del Rio and Jim Caldwell. Those were some questionable
Those
firings.
Were the biggest ones, right, that people were. What about
surprised.
The Packers? Did you see they fired the longtime defensive coordinator, Dom Capers?
I did. And I said, it's all about what have you done for me lately. You know, the Packers had a down year, but again, the Packers lost their quarterback. They lost
another example.
Aaron Rodgers. You know, he makes a big difference on that team. But I was really taken back by them firing Don Capers. But again, this is a business, and the NFL is about what have you done for me lately. So they also dismissed their offense coordinator and the quarterback's coach. So they've been cleaning up over there.
I mean, it's cleaning house, right? That's what all the teams are doing. And then I think the only team that we haven't talked about was the Texans. They agreed to mutually part ways with special teams coordinator Larry Izzo. And then also it was reported that defensive backs coach John Butler and running backs coach Charles London also won't return. So Houston getting their fair share of sweeping out the coaches' closet. But as you said, I mean, I think it is a carousel. We will see these coaches other places. I mean, it's kind of like once you get in, for the most part, you will still be there in the NFL
Absolutely.
Or college coaching. So, I mean, I wish them all the best, and I hope these teams get good coaches, you know?
Yeah, and they're going to land on their feet. I mean, these guys are good guys. And like I said, we're not in the NFL locker rooms. We're not in the coaching meetings. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I was really taken aback by the coach that was fired early this year, which he should have been fired, that was on video sniffing cocaine on the table.
Oh, my gosh, for the Dolphins,
Yeah, for the Dolphins. And I felt like that was just, you know, and the young lady he was conversing back and forth with who turned him in, I felt like that was, you know, that kills dreams because these players look up to these coaches. Like father figures, and this is why I take this job so seriously, because I got thousands of followers. And when you make a a bad decision, it don't just affect you and your family. It affects everybody.
Exactly, right.
Those guys looked up to him because he was a great coach. He had been there for a while. And to make that kind of decision to do that, if you're doing that in your private time, it's still bad. But to do it on video and send it out, that was a bad decision on his part.
That was crazy. And that video, I mean, I still just remember that video, like you said, and it was a horrible, horrible, horrible time. But all you can hope is that he learned from it and hopefully that he's a better person today. And then hopefully that's a wake-up call to other coaches, you know, if you're doing – or anybody, really. If you're doing the wrong thing, you know, what's done in the dark will come to the light. I always preach that. So try to live
your life
as right, you know, as you can. But, you know, staying on that, I mean, what about my – are you serious now? Are you serious right now, which is, of course, what we can say to that topic. But also, I want to move now to Mike Tyson. And I don't know if you heard, but he's reportedly getting into the marijuana business. The former heavyweight champion, he – recently broke ground on a 40-acre plot of desert in California, which he intends to turn into a cannabis resort that produces, quote, high-quality strains of THC and CBD, unquote. Mike Tyson getting into the marijuana business. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, Iron Mike. Come on, Mike. Mike, stick to the movies, man. You know, I love them in Hangover. Mike Tyson is a very beloved individual. Mike Tyson would give you the shirt off his back. He's made some questionable decisions, you know, biting Holyfield's ear and doing some other things. But for the most part, he's a good person. I'm more concerned, Kelsey, with them legalizing marijuana in
California. Yeah, what they did in California.
And here's the problem I have with this. There's thousands of young men, especially young men of color, who are locked up in prison right now for selling marijuana, and now you're legalizing it. So I know Mike Tyson is planning on growing it in his backyard. I'm more concerned with those individuals who've been arrested, who's been tried by a jury, who's been found guilty and been given, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years for selling marijuana, and now they're legalizing it. I feel like that's hypocritical on their part.
Right. That's what a lot of people have questions about, because right now you legalize it. So what happens to those people? I mean, it just causes a lot of questions. But now we see, you know, that, I mean, we saw it in Colorado. Now we see it in California. We see a lot more states starting to look at it. And I think they're all looking at the economic, you know, aspect of it. But, of course, everyone's preaching that it'll be for medical uses, which even the mayor of California City said, which is why she said she's excited about Tyson Ranch, because she believes it will bring medical marijuana, Robert, to those in need, as well as jobs, revenue, and income for residents. I mean, what do you think about that point that, of course, we'll probably be seeing a lot of politicians making as they, you know, look to see if they want to legalize it?
I just feel like that's what happened, Kelsey. When people start making money off of stuff, then it becomes okay for you to do it. And I'm just tired of the hypocrisy of that, because there are people who are suffering behind that. You know, there are people who are being in prison. There are people who are losing their lives, losing their families. And don't get me wrong, you shouldn't be selling drugs. I'm not sticking up for people who are selling drugs. I want to make that clear. But you got people out here selling this stuff, and now all of a sudden – you find a way. When I say you, I'm talking about the government, I'm talking about these politicians, I'm talking about these other folks who find a way to make money and capitalize off of it. Now it's okay.
Right.
What about all those people? What about all those thousands of people who have been arrested and locked up for selling this stuff? It's just it just sends a bad message, in my opinion. And it's basically saying, hey, it's sending the message that it's okay to use drugs. It's okay to do this now. And I think that's just sending a bad message to our young people. I think it's sending a bad – at first it was saying people were using it for cataracts and they're using it to calm down, to stay calm. I mean, it was just all kind of reasons people were using it. But still, there are people incarcerated. There are people being in prison for selling this stuff and smoking. There was a guy – here's an example. There's a young man – who, you know, the three-strike policy they came out with that I think was
in California.
California. So he walking, and he's walking down the street. This is third strike. He had a couple petty – I think he stole something from a store, and then he never hurt anybody, but he had a gun on him the second time, and it wasn't licensed – or it wasn't – he wasn't licensed to carry. Third time, he's walking down the street smoking some marijuana. Third strike. They gave that man 30 years in prison.
Wow.
Now, this judge gave him 30 years in prison. Now, the same judge had a white guy come in. This white guy is being tried for killing his wife. He killed his wife, and he buried her in the backyard.
Oh, wow.
He got probation.
Wow.
Same judge. He killed his wife.
Wow.
Buried her in the backyard.
Mm.
He got probation. He got probation because he had money. This young man gets 30 years for smoking a joint, smoking some marijuana, walking down the street, and now you're legalizing it while this man's sitting in jail during 30 years. I just find that hypocritical.
Wow. I mean, that just, it's crazy to think about. You know, Mike Tyson, I hope he's just, I want him to be smart and safe. You know,
I don't want him to do that,
business.
But, you know.
You just don't want him to do it.
He's a grown man, and he's going to do what he wants to do. I just felt like Mike Tyson's had enough problems in his life. I would just stay away from that. But, again, they're legalizing it. So,
right. Which is
Mike
why
Tyson's
he can
like,
sell
everybody's
it legally.
Starting to get paid. Why can't I get paid?
He wants
everybody
to be
else
a part of
paid.
The money tree. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, and he even admitted to using marijuana, you know, during his boxing career in his memoir.
Oh, absolutely.
Undisputed
Mike
Truth,
Tyson,
you know.
Before he fought Buster Douglas, he said he was high, he was drunk, he was sleeping with a lot of women. He didn't even train for that fight, you know,
right.
So he didn't take it seriously. But I just think the legalized drugs in the United States, I mean, just tell you what direction our country's going in.
Yeah. And then, I mean, now that's like, you know, a top thing for lawmakers, you know, to debate over. So that just tells you, you know, how serious it is. And then also I want to bring up this point to you. Actually, there's a retired NFL offensive lineman, Evan Britton, who actually said cannabis is the perfect medicine for athletes. So he actually started a new nonprofit called Athletes for Care alongside 26 other athletes from the NFL, NBA, NHL, and UFC. And basically, the organization is dedicated to promoting a holistic alternative approach to athlete wellness, both for those still playing and retirees. And, you know, he said cannabis is but one part of the wellness package, but he thinks it's an important one. You know, so NFL players Eugene Monroe, former NFL players Eugene Monroe and Nate Jackson, you know, already have a history of cannabis advocacy, and now Athletes for Care is allowing, you know, them to come together, and they call it basically a safe space for athletes who are interested in alternative medicine. And I'll tell you, I mean, even from just talking to athletes, I see more and more athletes, Robert, trying to get into this legal marijuana business. I mean, so, I mean, do you think it's a smart move for them, or do you think they should all just stay away?
Well, I think that you have choices to make. Me personally, because of the history that I've seen with this stuff, I'm staying away from it. I believe in holistic approaches. I don't believe in smoking marijuana to try to solve my problems. I just believe in trying to, you know, some people overweight, stop eating so much.
Right.
I mean, you have diabetes, you have to cut certain things out of your diet. I believe certain things that you deal with in life, you have to have some discipline, and you have to be accountable for your actions. I just don't see the end of the rainbow for this right here. Only thing I can see is somebody has found a way to make some money and have found a way to twist the laws and make it legal. And I really wish that folks would stay away from that. As an athlete, as a former athlete, I didn't believe in just putting stuff in my body that shouldn't be there. Now at age 46, I still feel well. I still, you know, I got some aches and bruises, but I still feel good for the most part because I took care of myself and just did the right things and not putting things in my body that shouldn't be there. And I just think it's a bad idea, in my opinion. But, you know, to each his own, and, you know, I'm not knocking anybody for doing it, but I just feel like it's a bad idea.
Well, I mean, I appreciate your honesty and openness, especially since you are a former player. You know, I think that speaks volumes. So all I can say is only time will tell. We'll keep an eye out on California and anywhere else that, you know, plans to do it, as well as Athletes for Care. And, you know, we'll probably talk about them more on my show. But one thing that's really creating a lot of buzz still that I'm seeing on social media is this Johnny Manziel conversation. And I want to go back to it, Robert, with you before we end, just because I want to hear from you. So, of course, the CFL has been one way that athletes try to get back into the NFL, or even college athletes don't make it there, you know, try to play on those teams. But tell me, I mean, do you think, and this is something, you know, that's been continuously talked about, do you think that football needs some type of minor league system for athletes coming out of college? Or can it serve as, you know, a way for high school students to go directly to that league if they don't want to go to college and still have NFL dreams? I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on, you know, if the NFL needs a minor league system such as other leagues have.
And I would love to see that. First of all, I think Canadian football is great. And because I don't live in Canada, I don't watch it as much. But I think I had the opportunity to play in Canada, and I just chose not to. I just felt like I'm going to the NFL or I'm done.
Right.
So to your point, I think that players should play where they want to play. I feel like they should have a minor league. I feel like there should be some minor leagues. I think it needs to be expanded, not just for the athletic purposes. These athletes need to take classes on how to keep their money. They need to take classes on how to treat women. They need to go. I mean, I was so disappointed in Darren Sharper because I knew him personally, and I had no idea he was doing those things to women. And I feel like women need to not throw themselves at these athletes like they're doing, because these guys are young men. Most of them never had anything, and all of a sudden they got all this money, all these women coming at you. It's kind of unfair to these young athletes who haven't been prepared for this limelight that they've been tossed into. So I believe there needs to be some classes for all athletes before they enter into the NFL. Financial literacy, there needs to be some classes on self-sufficiency, on how to manage their money, on talking about rape and sexual assault. It's been disappointing to see, some of my, some friends and some associates, Marshall Faulk and some of these guys who've been caught into that web. I just think it needs to go beyond football. I think it needs to dig into some of the, personal lives of these young men and how they manage money, how they manage their family, how they manage their friends, and how they keep the right people around them while they're in the National Football League. All those things are important, but absolutely, 1,000%, there needs to be a minor league to the NFL. Absolutely. And they tried it before. They had the World League, the World Football League. They had the XFL that lasted one season.
Who can forget?
Yeah, one of my former teammates, he hate me, Rod Smart, who played at Western Kentucky. So there needs to be a minor league for the NFL, because guys need to stay in shape and guys need to continue to play, because guys get hurt. So they're going to be calling, some of these athletes are going to get hurt. So they need to be called up from some, because the basketball has it, the NBA has a minor league. Why can't the NFL have it? So, players are being called up every day. Baseball players have a minor league. Why can't the NFL have it? Absolutely. We should have a minor league, and we should have had it 20 years ago.
And so, talking about players, this season there were so many huge injuries, and that's what got me thinking about it, because, so many teams, lost key players. You talked about some of them, but, why do they not have it if other leagues do? So, Robert, wow. What a way to end the show. It was a blast to have you. I'm going to have to save my Woman Crush Wednesday for next show, but you were so much fun. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listening with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with K&N from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with K&N, visit foxsports1340am.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.